Just so that you know, we gave you 1 minute grace time. It's 8:11. So don't say nobody ever gave you anything. Okay, so what we're going to look at now is I'm going to move you a little more directly and focused on the man problem. And every society, in a way, like I said, starts out with a man problem until it learns how to solve it. And actually, the process of civilization, I don't mean that as a noun, I mean it as a verb, civilizing, starts with the man himself. And again, we're going to see that a little bit more in the morning as well. And the way that women do that. You think about that. The domestic woman, if you will, is a very, very powerful player because it is she that changes and controls and directs men and shapes them. We're going to see that a good bit in the morning. In fact, there's only really three things that can focus male energy in a somewhat positive direction. That is military. Even thinking back, you know, into the Roman and Greek years and things like that, because there's an authority. You do what I say. You do not speak back to me. So that's kind of a horrible authoritarian kind of control. The other is sports. Rather than a drill instructor, you have a coach. He's the boss. You do what he says. The third one, and neither of those regulate male sexuality. Sports figures, you know what? Very sexually chaste, right? Military men, shore leave, that's like they go to the shore and they want to go visit museums and go get books, right? Please don't affect my understanding of that. But the other is marriage. Marriage regulates maleness like nothing else. Okay? And we're going to talk about that. Now, let me say this. The example of a male going to get health insurance or auto insurance. The agent asks you if you're married. He's not asking you in a sentimental way. Right? Tell me about yourself. Oh, good, you're married. That makes my heart feel good. No, you will get a cheaper rate, car, health, life, if you are married. Because they like married men. No, why? Because they're settled. And why are they settled? They're not out squealing their wheels. They're not out at bar fights. They're, you know what? They're focused in a positive way. Insurance is not an emotional, you know, kind of thing. It is just hardcore cash on the barrel head, and they make that determination that it is much better for us to bet on married men than it is to bet on unmarried men because the ring makes all the difference. The woman makes all the difference in a very powerful way. So we're first going to start out looking at family itself. And my work at Focus on the Family, I've made this case. At Focus, we have a parenting department, we have a marriage department, and we have a life department, very committed to life and the well-being of children and things like that. But in terms of family formation, we have marriage, the foundation of the family, and we have parenting, the continuation of the family. And I call this, what I'm going to get into, is the three-legged stool of family formation. Let me see if I can get this to work. Yeah. So this is the stool of family. The first leg, it rests on three legs. The first leg is marriage. It's the foundation, ideally. It starts with whoever and whoever sitting in the tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G, and then marriage comes, and then the baby comes. We have parenting. So focus has two of those departments. Now, this is important. Marriage, and this is universally true, women will always desire marriage. Think about this. Girls from earliest age, they envision their wedding. They envision Prince Charming. They know from earliest ages what their wedding is going to be like. And it's not necessarily because mom or dad said, now it's time for you to go to your room and be quiet and think about what your wedding is going to be like. It's really fascinating. I mean, you guys have seen it. Up in Denver, there's this wonderful natural history museum. And one of the parts that I like about it is the artifacts, if you will, of authentic, genuine Native American culture. To be able to see, like, those moccasins were on the feet of somebody who was living that culture. The beads on them, things like that. I mean, that's legit. One of the things that you see is corn husk dolls. And we know about them today, but where did they start? They have those artifacts. They're old, they're worn, and you're like, there was a little Native American girl of some tribe who played with that, whose parents fashioned that, probably the dad who fashioned it into that little doll. Interesting. So the Native American said, no, little girl, you will be a mother. No, that was in her heart to do. There's that nature there. So women will always want marriage, and they will always want to be mothers. It's really interesting. You see this problem today, if you will. In fact, this data, out of wedlock childbearing, do you think it's higher in the 18 to 22-year-old range, the 22 to 30, or the 30 to 40, out of wedlock childbearing? Where? It's in the older. It's actually been going down in the teen and early 20 years. Why do you think it's growing out of control in the 20s and the 30s to 40s? Why? Societal pressure, but it's also, I cannot find a man. Feminism has told me not to settle for a man, but there is something happening within me. The show 30 Rock, which is kind of this situational thing of like a Saturday Night Live show, and the main woman who is in there, they have like a 3-episode series where she literally goes baby crazy. You know? I mean, they're recognizing this, that something happens in a woman, and she is just like, can't walk down the street without seeing a baby, you know, and just get all excited about it. It is natural in women. It's not natural in all women. It is not natural that every woman is naturally going to go into womanhood. It's not universal, if you will, that all men are not, you know, are going to go in a crazy way or not go to adulthood. What it means is it's the general norm that that's the case. So we have these two legs, marriage, parenting. Women will want those things. So you go talk to these 20-something women, 30-something women. So why aren't you married? Why don't you have a child with the man that you're living with? It's not necessarily because she's sexually promiscuous, or that she doesn't want marriage. Why? It's this. It's the third leg of the stool. Manhood. I talk to a lot of journalists who will call Focus, interview a number of us on different things. And if it's a woman calling, I will ask her, you know, can I ask you a question? I'm doing some research. From New York, from DC, from different places like this, and these are career women, and many of them, you know, liberal or you know, not quite where we're coming from. And I'll say, are you married? No. Some will say, yes, I have a child, and intentionally, or, you know, from a previous marriage. But I say, do you have any interest in marrying? If you could wave a wand and be married tomorrow, would you? Every one of them have said, oh my goodness, if I could be married this afternoon to a good, reliable man, I would. They desire that. It's not a conservative ideal. It's not a Christian ideal. It's not an ideology that appeals to certain people. It's in the nature of the woman herself. And again, not to everybody, but as a rule across all cultures, that's the case. The weakest leg of that stool is, ask women today, is the manhood thing. What are you doing, ladies, with all the great options you have in men, you know, coming and courting you? It's laughable. Not because it's funny, but because it's, yeah, those guys don't exist. Again, manhood is not natural. Maleness does not naturally go in the direction civilization requires. Manhood is this, and in terms of the expectation, manhood requires the expectation of women. We expect you, sir, to step up and be a man. Now, women are not doing that today. Not that it's their responsibility, but I like to say this, Bronco Stadium, okay, if you filled that stadium up with, I mean, to the brim with people of all ideological backgrounds, but they're married, man, women married, and they have been married more than 35 years. And ask them, men, are you better men because you're married to a woman? Again, there will be laughter, not because it's a funny question, but because it's an obvious question. The women know that, and the men know that. The women had expectations of the men, and the men had to say, am I going to live up to this, or am I not? I remember Jackie, early in our marriage, she said, Glenn, we're going to have kids. And I want those kids to grow up in a home, a house. And I want us to own that house. And in order for us to own that house, you are the one that's going to buy us that house. In order for you to buy us that house, you're going to have a decent job. And I remember that, like, I mean, I don't think I can do that. Right? Like, I don't see that working out in any possible way because I know who I am, right? But it worked. It worked. And it was because a woman, in a very kind of calm, simple voice, with no muscle, just said, here's what I expect of you. And I had to make the decision, am I going to step up to that challenge? Can I do it? And I had to go talk to some buddies, you know? I had to talk to older men. Have you guys ever done that? You know, have you ever been there? And they laugh. Yep. Here's what you do. It was interesting tonight at dinner. Dick even said that to me. He was like giving me some investment advice. You know, it's kind of what men do to other, you know, here's how you can provide even better for your family. That provision thing, and we're going to talk about that. And Dick will give you that advice later on. He's got a desk in the back. It's also at the direction and the encouragement of other men. Other men saying, son, get your feet off the desk, pull your pants up, you know, do something. And I think this is huge, men and women, that we should be encouraging young men more to go into the trades. I have a good friend of mine. My dad encouraged me. I grew up in the South. He encouraged me to go into heating and air conditioning installation. And I was out fishing with this buddy of mine from the second grade. He knows my dad. And I'm like, I was not good in school. I was just a total slacker. And I just asked my buddy, I said, can you believe that? I mean, I would have missed what I'm doing now. And he said, Glenn, you would have missed what you're doing now, but we would be fishing on your boat, and you would be And he's right. I mean, we need to see that for young men. Men to say, to go into the trades is honorable. And here, know your skill well, and show up when you say you're going to show up, and do what you say you're going to do, and leave a clean work site. You will have all the work you possibly can. We need to encourage young men to do that. College is great, but it is not the only way to get where you need to get to be a provider. We need a revolution in that way among our men towards our boys. That's not part of my talk, but that's a commercial. Okay, so going to anthropology, and this is the nerd part of me coming out. And again, I mean, real quick, in high school, I mean, I would show up to school and I'm like, this is history class and it's American history, but that's about all I know of what's going on. You know, I mean, I just was not a dialed-in student. But later on, God just got a hold of me, and at work, I mean, I have shelves and shelves and shelves of books that, you know, something just lit on fire with me. My first day of college was when I was 28 years old. Very, very late bloomer. But see, I love to do this kind of research, and I always put the books up here. I didn't read about somebody who read about this stuff. This is stuff that I've read, that the quotes, I mean, these are things that I found from original sources. Margaret Mead, she was one of the early anthropologists. She wrote a wonderful book, and a lot of these books that I say are wonderful, they're not wonderful for, like, non-professionals to read, but for professionals, you can take out the bones and, like, you know, she's getting at some basic things in light of all the other stuff that she says. But she says some wonderful things about what it means to be male and female and what she's observing across universal cultures. And I have some of these pictures that, yes, she's talking to people who live in cultures way different than ours, on the other side of the world. You know, we live up here, they live down here, we live over here, they live over here. Guess what? The men and the women are generally the same everywhere that you go, okay? She says this in her book, Male and Female. She's talking about what every society needs to do with the male when he's young. Every known human society, every known human society, everywhere in the world, comma, the young man learns that when he grows up, one of the things that he must do in order to be a full member of society is to provide food and protection for some female and her young. Every known society rests firmly the foundation, the cement that everything else is built on. She says this, every known human society rests firmly on the learned, nurturing behavior of the man. The learned, nurturing behavior. Men have to be taught, and we're going to talk in just a minute about the three P's of manhood. She goes on to say, and this is fascinating, okay? She's writing like in the 40s and 50s. She explains this behavior being learned is fragile and can disappear rather easily under social conditions that no longer teach it effectively. Do we see that? Sociologically, there's a report. It's called the Moynihan Report. That's the name that it has developed. but it's a report that Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who worked for the Johnson administration, he went on to be a key senator from New York. When he retired, Hillary Clinton took his position. But he, when he was in the Johnson administration, published a report May 1965 called The Negro Family, A Case for National Action. And what he was saying was, and it's a very important report. You can find it online if you're nerdy enough to really want to study that kind of stuff. And the fact that it exists is the big thing. And he wrote to President Johnson and really the nation, he said, the 1963 Civil Rights Act that we passed as a nation, that's a great thing, that is going to elevate our African American citizens to own a greater part of our community in the apple pie, or you know, the American pie. If we do not fix the problem of the crumbling family in the black community, all this other, which is good, will be for naught. And he lamented that the fatherless rate in the black community at that time was 25%. It's 40% across the board today. He understood that in certain communities, like Margaret Mead said, when we stop teaching what men need to do to step up and take responsibility for their reproductive actions, guess what? They're just not going to do it in and of themselves. It needs to be taught. Margaret Mead told us that, and it is true in every civilization. Another very, very good book, and this is more academic, but David Gilmore, he is an anthropologist that is at a university up in New York City. This is, if you want to be super nerdy and read deeply into this, his book, Manhood in the Making. We can pass over that title, but manhood, making, those two things go together. It just does not happen. Cultural concepts of masculinity. And he's looking, this is a more recent book than Margaret Mead, but he's looking across human cultures, even in a more sophisticated way than Mead was doing, and he sees a lot of the same things. And I love the cover of this book. You know, just the diversity there, okay? Like, okay, this guy, you know, he's a little bit like us, he's a little bit like us, but look at this, you know? I mean, like, how do they do life? The guys do life kind of like we do. And the women do domestic life kind of like we do. And the women play a very responsible part in helping men become domesticated. And other men calling the younger men to this. We're going to see this very profound in just a minute. And then these are the other sociological or anthropological books. Branislav Malinowski, I'm not really going to go into his work, but another example. He's going out and talking to folks in very different cultures, but they find these things true. Manhood is fully achieved, and what I'm talking about here is across human culture, okay? Manhood is fully achieved when a young man accomplishes the three P's. The three P's of manhood. And this really comes from David Gilmore. And it's a little bit different in our community, our culture, because we live in an industrialized world where we do not have to be responsible for collecting today what we're going to eat tomorrow, right? But, and I'll explain how those transitions or how the connections are made. First of all, the young man, like Margaret Mead says, the young man must learn and come to a place where he marries and procreates and becomes a father, okay? Whenever I say that, people say, so a young man today, if he doesn't marry and doesn't have children, he can't be a man? No, what I'm saying is that the ideal generally is for him to marry. The idea generally is for him to create something that's outside of himself, okay? You think about, for Christians, somebody who goes into missionary work, Or like in Catholicism, somebody who commits themselves to the priesthood. They are becoming fathers, if you will. They are procreating. They're committing themselves to something. The priesthood directs and controls what I do and what I can't do. My missionary work determines what I can and what I can't do, and I have to be a different sort of individual. Discipline, focus, self-denying, and procreation. My procreation is in the gospel work that I'm doing. It's interesting. I talked to a priest one time. We were on a bus. We were going somewhere at a conference. And I asked him, I said, you know, Father, like, do you just get to go home and kick your feet up and just chill and watch TV? And he goes, yeah. And he said this. He said, I usually get the kids, and he just was saying this. It was just what he says. He goes, I usually get the kids to bed at about 9 o'clock. And I knew exactly what he meant, right? You know what? My family's taken care of. My fathering duties are done. You know, now I can just chill. He saw it that way. So, you know, in the primitive culture, and even in our culture today, if you have a guy who, and I'll show you some examples of this in just a minute, but you know what? I own my own business. I don't employ anybody. I make a lot of money. I'm not interested in sharing that money with anybody. I'm not interested in expanding myself into the next generation. I'm just interested in me and the boats I have, the cars I have, the house I have, the food I have. How many of you are going to go, I want to be that guy, right? If society consisted of guys like that, he's doing the next P. Okay? He's providing. He's providing for himself. He's working. But if he's not working for others, giving himself to others, in fact, David Gilmore says this, the man consumes less than he produces. That's very significant. What he's saying is the young man learns to provide well for his wife, for his child, and the larger community. I love this, is my kids are older, and yes, they ask for money, and I've got to give them money. In fact, somebody told me, they go, you think the kids are expensive now? Wait till they're, you know, I'm writing bigger checks for them, right? Then I need $5 for the field trip. I need $350 for an alternator in my car, you know? And as a dad, I'm happy to help them in those kinds of things. But here's the thing. When my kids were little, open my wallet and like moths would come out of it, you know, because like, go check dad's wallet, you know, I think he might have some money. Now that my kids are older, I've actually got money in my wallet, you know, because when my kids were littler, it was like, you know what, whatever money is in my wallet is you guys. That is a radical kind of change that happens within a man. And yes, I'm happy to be able to walk into a store and like, oh, I've actually got money that I can buy the super burrito that Dick took me to, but Dick bought it for me, so I didn't have to. The other thing that he does is he protects. He protects his family and the community from the dangers of nature and from other tribes. So he procreates, he contributes to the next generation. His circle, if you will, throw the stone in the water, and his ripples, they go out. His clan expands, if you will. He provides well for them. He has the honor. And his kids are like, you know what? My dad works hard. He provides for us. Now, we may not have a lot, but we have clean clothes, and there's always biscuits on the table, you know, as simple as that might be. The other is he protects. He steps up. He places himself in danger. We don't expect that of women. Think about this. A shooting, okay, that we're hearing too many of, the women will run. Some of the men will run, and we don't really blame them. But what if all the men ran? Okay? What if all the women ran? You know what? Ladies, please do. But sometimes the men have to step up and run toward the bullets. That's what men do. And if a boy doesn't learn to do that, or at least be willing to do it, he has not entered into manhood. Society has to teach these three P's. Now, this is interesting, and I love this, is, and again, a part of my work learning this stuff, the words matrimony and, pardon me, husband. Matrimony is, it's not a romantic term. Historically, anthropologically, it is a social community term. Matrimony, of course, speaks to marriage. But let's break that word down. Matra, maternal, matrilineal. It means it's to the mother. It's not just to the woman, it's to the mother. And then the last half of that, money, kind of money, but like alimony, it is support, provision. Marriage is, as it develops across all cultures, is the man stepping up and doing right by the woman. It is the man saying, she has my baby. I had an effect on her. This is a long-term effect. And that she has my future, if you will, my genetic future within her. To be a man, society expects me to take her hand in matrimony, to provide for her, to care for her, because she is in a state that society needs and thinks is wonderful. In fact, at the hospital, when she finishes that process of her maternity, they play a nice little jingle at the hospital so that everybody can welcome that new baby into the world. It is a fascinating thing, right? And marriage didn't start out in society as, let's have this wonderful thing where we all get together and we have a party and she can dress up. Marriage started this way. You have a closed culture, and I like to say it this way. We're all flying somewhere, okay? And we crash land on this island, and it's just us. And we're waiting a couple months. Somebody's going to come save us. Well, they're not coming. So we kind of have to start building a society, collecting food, making rules for the food, making rules for cleanliness. You can't do your business here. You got to do it way over there. You can't just come and get any of the group food that you want. We ration it out to make sure. So we're building rules. The other thing is we have this cute little couple. And you know what? She's starting to talk to him, and he's starting to talk to her, and, you know, like, what's happening? And we're all paying attention to this, and we think it's wonderful. Now they start going off by themselves. And we ask, so, has he kissed you yet? You know, and we know where this is going, right? And she's telling us the story, and like, no, it's been 4 months, and he still hasn't kissed me. And we're like, dude, step up, you know? I mean, we know where this is going. But we know at a particular point that it is going to become consequential. You know what? If you're going to be kissing this woman, we need you to commit your whole life to her. No. If you are going to be participating in something that could result in the growth of our island, population-wise, we want you, sir, to make a commitment to her so that she has what she needs to make it through her pregnancy. And when the little baby is born, that she has the help she needs. And the other thing, so that we'll come over and help you some evenings, but we don't, as a community, want to have to take responsibility for this child. Here's what we're going to do, young man. It's getting to that direction, out on the beach next Wednesday. All of us are going to be there. We want to hear you, young man, commit yourself, everything, your life, your fortunes, your work, your resources to this woman and this woman alone. And we want to hear her accept that and commit. Marriage, right? And then we're going to celebrate the wonderful thing that just happened. Not romantically, but a new family was created. A new cell of our civilization was created. Matrimony is practical, if you will, because of the nature of female sexuality and because of the nature of male sexuality. So matrimony is, dude, you belong to this woman. This is your focus, okay? Husband, that word, it comes from the Old Norse collection. It's house bond. And house is this address under this roof with this sink, with this food that needs to be collected, with this education that goes on with these kids, this address. You are bound to this house. You don't have many other women that you're bound to or that you can go have extracurricular with. You are bound to this house. I am housebound. I am a husband. That's where that word comes from. And it's related not just to the relational or the romantic relationship with the woman, but with the family. Fascinating, right? And men, think about this. You live in a neighborhood, okay? You move into a neighborhood. Let's do it this way. You move into a neighborhood, and the real estate agent, they go, oh, you'll love this neighborhood. It is filled with single men. Every house you see, every one of those men are single. You know what that means? They have free time and will probably come over to your house and offer to help you cut your grass. You know, to do this, to do this. Or if she says, this is a wonderful neighborhood. Every family here, married, they have kids. Yeah, I don't want to live in this neighborhood. No, you see that as a good thing, right? Oh, great, lots of kids for my kids to play with and my kids to see how these different families work, and there's this cohesion there. And again, this is interesting. One of my buddies, a sociologist at the University of Virginia, he did this study, and you can find it online at the Institute for Family Studies. He studied upper-class, more liberal people in California. He says the divorce rate among them and the out-of-wedlock birth rate among them is incredibly low. Okay? These people don't believe that for other people. They make shows and things like that that show, but what do they themselves do? You know what? Family cohesion is a good thing, right? Very, very interesting. Okay. We're going to go by that. See, this is the other thing is, you know, okay, these guys are chronologically men. But we see this, you know, they haven't learned to commit themselves to a woman. They are not providing and they're not protecting. And this is a big thing, you guys, that like these guys, sexuality among young males is going down. And we may think among people like us, okay, well, they're not out tomcatting and that kind of stuff. No, they're just not interested. Why do you think that is? Pornography. And games. But these are guys that do not know how to approach a woman. And think about that. I mean, in this room, yes, the kind of, you know, bar scene and stuff like that, we don't sell. But at least those guys knew how to go out and talk to a woman, connect to a woman, to hunt, if you will. You know, our men today have just lost that. And the women know that. And in a way, that's why the women have felt like they need to become more sexually aggressive. Because the men are not stepping up. They, and not only that, with virtual sexuality, they do not know how to relate to a real live woman. I think about the diminishment of our current humanity there, right? And again, you know, hook up at a bar, it's not a good moral thing, but at least there is that semblance of they're mirroring something that's larger than them, right? Here, these guys are just, you know what? We don't even know how to deal in reality. Artificial reality, right? It has all kinds of negative implications there. And this is what we're seeing here. This is the other thing that I was talking about, the business owner. Whoop. The Wolf of Wall Street, okay? This guy's making it. He's making money. He is providing for himself. But he's consuming everything that he creates. He's not turning it over to the next generation, right? We all see that man as a good man. We do not see this man as a good man. Even though he's rocking the world, making it happen. Manhood must, and we're coming up, we've got about 8 minutes. Manhood must do these things. Because we ask this question, what is manhood? And first of all, we have to understand that that is a difficult question to answer. Not because there's not such a thing, an objective thing as manhood, but because it's a mysterious thing. It has an essence to it. It's not just, okay, here's what the man does, and that's Clint Eastwood, or George Clooney, or there's 101 different ways to be a good man, but we can still talk meaningfully about, is that a manly behavior or an unmanly behavior? I like to say that there's one thing. Men can do a lot of seemingly feminine things in masculine ways. Mikhail Baryshnikov, ballet dancer, nobody's going to make fun of him, right? He does that in a very masculine way. But a man, there's one thing that girls do that men just simply cannot do, and it's not procreation, it's prancing. A man cannot prance. It's the only thing that he cannot do in a masculine way. Okay, so what are the generalities of what a man does? A man must have courage. He must be willing, even as a boy, this morning in the airport, there was a mom. She was on the flight that I was with. She had two little toddler boys. And one of her little boys kept running off. And just like, boom, he's gone. And she said, you know, she was letting him run, and that was good. But she's like, not too far. And then finally, you know, she like had to run after him. That little boy was courageous. You know, like, there's something out there. I want to go find out what it is. He was demonstrating in a simple, playful way, go west, young man. Go out there and find your future. You know, you have to have that courage. When Jackie told me, you know what, you got to buy a house, I had to screw up my courage to do that. Do I have what it takes to do that? He steps up as well. He, if you will, changes the environment. I like to tell young guys this. You're in a meeting room. You're in a Sunday school class. You're in something. Somebody comes in, and all the seats are taken, and three people walk in. If none of the women step up and go outside and get a chair, we don't think any less of them. For the guy who stands up, well, this is interesting. For the woman who stands up and goes and gets the three extra chairs, what do we immediately think? We make a profound judgment. And it's not on the woman. Get up. You know? For the young boy who knows, okay, I have to step up. When I see a situation like that, as simple as that is, I've been trained by my dad to go, there's a problem. I get to solve it. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to go get out. I'm going to bring the chairs in. For that little boy, every other man will look at that boy and go, dude, you know? And crap, why didn't I do that? Right? That's what a man does. He sees his environment. He studies the problem and he says, how can I solve it? MacGyver. I mean, that's what that's about, right? Self-reliance. Be prepared. That's the scout motto, you know? That the good man, he can't be prepared for everything, but you look at the trunk of a man's car, you know, a good man. He's got like everything in there. You look at a woman's trunk, there's an umbrella, and then there's the shopping bags that she takes so that, you know, she doesn't have to get the plastic bags. And that's it. And maybe the little pad for when she goes to see her grandson, you know, play sports. That's about it. You look at the guy's trunk, there's everything in there for every possibility, right? There's bear traps in there. Tenacity is a big thing. I remember when I was a little boy, I remember I was fascinated with slide projectors. And I knew, you know, how do they work and could I make one? So I knew there was a light bulb and there was a thing that the light went through and it shone up. And I remember, it was maybe just a couple of hours, but it seemed like all day. I got a lamp and I drew a picture and I wanted to see if I could project it. And I remember my mom coming in and saying, it's dinner time. And I'm like, you know what? I'm working. That is very important, moms, as like, it's not a big thing, it's not important, he's not going to change history, but our son is focused on something. You know what? And if she would have said, you know what, can I keep a plate warm for you? What would that have said to me? She believes in what I'm doing. You know? Huge. And it's important to do that for our little girls when they do that. They will and they can do that. But it's more instinctive for the boy to come and support that. Tenacity, he doesn't give up. Self-control, he knows how to. It's interesting that I saw this. This was at Chuck E. Cheese when my kids were little. The ball bowl, you know? That there was this kid, and he... kids are down there, and he just runs in and just dives in. I, not to judge, but I'm betting that kid probably doesn't have an involved dad. Because dads are like, son, watch what you're doing. You know? Oh, I've got to think about other people. You know, I've got to be responsible for my physical energy. Yes, you do, son. Because you could hurt people. Self-control. Under authority, this is the other thing, is he's under the authority of older men. He says, yes, sir. I love that in the military, you know? Even in the military, you know, these are big, strong men. Yes, ma'am. There's a strength in that submission, if you will. Loyalty. They, you know what, I'm committed to you. I'm committed to what we're doing. I'm all in for this, and you can count on me. Men do that as opposed to, you know what, you can count on me as long as I'm interested. Men don't do that. The next one is, and this is important, he lives his character. He acts it out. He could possess every one of these things. You know what, I'm courageous in here. I step up in here. You know, I'm tenacious in here. If he never demonstrates it, he is not a man. Manhood is demonstrated. Manhood that is not demonstrated is not manhood. Womanhood can just by her essence. She's just there. She is what she is. Look at all this stuff that I'm missing. I love this. You all know who this is. I am serious. You need to go online. What's his name? Ron Swanson. Go on YouTube and just type in Ron Swanson and manhood. That's all you have to study about manhood. I love this quote. So he works for government. He's super conservative. He hates government. Tom Haverford is like this metrosexual guy. and he says, I like Tom. He doesn't do a lot of work around here. He shows zero initiative. He's not a team player. He never wants to go the extra mile. Tom is exactly what I'm looking for in a government employee. But Tom is not what he's looking for in a man. There's a scene in there where he's a scoutmaster, and he goes, here's our scout manual. He opens it up. It's one page. It says, be a man. And he goes, I wrote it myself. You know, there's that expectation. Manhood that doesn't step up. Chesterton says this. A man takes initiative in demonstrating his character. Character not demonstrated is no character at all. Manhood is an action. Masculinity is an action. And the action that is masculine is good. It's pro-social. It protects. It provides. It gives itself to the next generation. It is the exact opposite of what we see as toxicity. Society demands it. It must form it. It must shape it. It must have it. And it is not toxic. Whenever you hear somebody link those two words, toxic, with masculinity, say, I am sorry, you seem nice. You have no idea what you're talking about. Thank you.